And I'm Holly.
And welcome to Wicked Within. This week we are back with another true crime case. Surprise, surprise. So I didn't know what I was going to do. I got really distracted during the holidays, as one does. And I was like, I need an actual break. And then I took that really seriously and I didn't do any, you know, research or planning or anything like that. So I didn't know what I was going to be doing. But as it turns out, we're not going to Oregon today, but we are going to California. And we're not going too far into California from where we are because we're talking about Mount Shasta today.
Oh.
Yes.
Still a little too close to home.
Yeah. Yes, I think you will find that to be true for sure. Because we are actually going to talk about Jackson County at least once in this episode in relation to this. So, all right, without further ado, we are going to dive in. On Tuesday, May 5th, 2020, at 10 o'clock in the morning, Devontae Morgan seemingly disappeared into thin air. No one has seen any sign of him since that fateful May morning, which begs the question, was Devontae's disappearance an accident or not? We're gonna decide what we think. That's what's happening now.
I have a surprised face. I didn't make any noises, but I already shook it.
Okay. Devontae was born on March 15th, 1992 in San Francisco, California. So he's almost exactly 2 months older than me, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. He grew up in a close-knit family with his mom, Terry, and his brother, Anthony, and lots of aunts, uncles, cousins, and grandparents. Family meant everything to Devontae, and he was there for every major event from birthdays to graduations to weddings and school concerts and more.
Aww.
Yeah, seems like a very great guy. Terry has said that everyone loved Devontae. He had a great laugh, kind eyes, and an easygoing personality. He struggled with a strong stutter for 11 to 12 years of his life, but that stutter seemed to disappear when he would sing or rap. So it's not surprising that Devontae grew up to be a talented musician.
Isn't that pretty common with stutterers?
It is very common with stutterers. Yes, a lot of people who stutter find that they are able to sing. I didn't know about the rap, though. I do find that impressive because obviously I can't rap full stop.
Like fast talking.
Yeah, so it was pretty incredible that he could still rap. Pretty cool.
Good for him.
Yeah. He could freestyle rap on command, he sang in his church choir, and he played the drums and the piano. As he got older and more confident, Devontae became a natural performer and started taking a leadership role in church.
Oh.
He led children's activities and hoped to become a preacher someday. Devontae didn't venture too far outside of his community in San Francisco. He liked to be near his family and friends, and he wasn't very interested in leaving home. His world became even smaller in 2017 when Devontae was shot in a drive-by shooting while standing on the front porch of his family home.
Oh my gosh!
Mm-hmm. Though it was intended for someone else, the bullet tore through his hand before it hit him in the pelvis.
Ugh.
Yeah. Devontae pushed his physical recovery too quickly, though the mental and emotional wounds ran even deeper. After a short period of recovery, Devontae ended up with a slight limp that caused him to become even more depressed.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. At the age of 25, he felt like his life was over. Devontae started self-medicating with drugs and alcohol, but after a couple of years, he was ready to start living again. He started going to the gym every day and tried to get clean. In 2019, Devontae was at a Stern Grove concert in the avenues of San Francisco when someone caught his eye. Devontae met a woman whose name we don't know, but I have decided to call her Lori because that is the name that I was given on a random name generator. Devontae and Lori seemed to hit it off right away, despite the fact that she was 20 years his senior.
Oh.
Yeah. But in some ways, her life experience and adventurous spirit helped to expand Devontae's world. The couple started traveling on a regular basis, taking short trips to the beach or to Las Vegas. Devontae's friends and family were happy that he was getting out to see more of the world, though they did notice some red flags in the relationship. One of those red flags was that Lori still drank and may have done some drugs as well, which didn't help Devontae meet and maintain his goal of staying clean.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. On Monday, May 4th, 2020, Devontae and Lori left for the small mountain town of Mount Shasta. The city of Mount Shasta sits at the base of the actual mountain of Shasta, which stands at 14,179 feet and is located about 4 hours north of San Francisco. So I personally love Mount Shasta and the surrounding areas because it's located in a beautiful area surrounded by great hiking trails, rivers, lakes, snow parks, and campgrounds. But the city of Mount Shasta also appeals to a couple very specific groups of people, and their values may at times conflict with one another. So I'm going to, just as a disclaimer, this is a generalization. I think that a lot of places tend to have some stereotypes about the people who live in that place. And I'm going to kind of talk about a couple of the different stereotypes for people who live in or near Mount Shasta right now. The first of these groups are the people who tend to live within or just outside of the city limits of Mount Shasta and other neighboring communities. So these people tend to be attracted to new age practices. You can find health food stores, crystal shops, and other similar kinds of products available in Mount Shasta. There are at least 3 crystal shops in downtown Mount Shasta, which is only about 2 miles long. So, yeah. And then there are those who live in the greater Mount Shasta area across rural Siskiyou County. Many of these people might fall under the category of people who just want to be self-sufficient and may even live off-grid. Overall, Siskiyou County leans slightly conservative, while the city of Mount Shasta leans more liberal. As a disclaimer, this isn't to say that all people within the town of Mount Shasta or within Siskiyou County fall firmly into these two groups, or that individuals can't have values that overlap with these groups, but I hope that this does provide some general context to the area because it is going to be important throughout the episode. Lori was a very spiritual person. She believed in the power of crystals, astrology, numerology, etc., so Mount Shasta was probably a very appealing place for her. When the couple arrived in town, they checked into Cold Creek Inn on the north side of town. Devontae's nephew had a birthday party scheduled for May 5th, so the couple were only planning on spending one night and part of the next day in Mount Shasta. Devontae's phone had recently broken, but his family had Lori's number and his brother Anthony called him on Monday evening. Everything seemed to be going well and Devontae seemed happy on the phone. So the next evening on Tuesday, May 5th, which would have been the day of the birthday party, Lori called Anthony. She told him that she and Devontae had had a fight earlier that day, and then he walked off to cool down, but never returned. Lori didn't seem particularly worried or concerned, so Anthony assumed all was well and Devontae just needed a little bit more time to cool off. Lori didn't tell him much about the area, and Anthony had never been to Mount Shasta, because if he knew about the dense forests and rough terrain, I think he would have been concerned earlier on. I know I would have been. No one heard from Devontae or Lori for the next couple of days, but on the morning of May 7th, Lori called Anthony again to say that Devontae was still missing.
Oh.
Yes. Now alarm bells were ringing for Devontae's family. Devontae's auntie Ruthie told Lori that she needed to go to the police and file a missing persons report immediately. Meanwhile, Devontae's family began preparing for a trip to Mount Shasta. Lori came in to file an official missing persons report at 9:16 a.m. on Thursday, May 7th. She told the officer on duty that she and Devontae had arrived in town on Monday, May 4th. They rented a car. I'm not sure how they got there without a car, but maybe they took a bus to save money. I'm not entirely sure what happened there. And then they checked into Cold Creek Inn. Lori said that Devontae woke her up early on May 5th so that she could come and stand outside with him while he had a cigarette. She was mad at him for waking her up early, and they were both annoyed when they realized that they left their room key in the room. We've all been there.
Yes.
They called after-hours service, and an on-call manager came over to let them back in their room. Lori continued on to explain that their fight continued through most of the early morning until they finally decided to walk away from the argument. Lori wanted to see the sunrise, so she headed in one direction and Devante headed in the opposite way. Later on that morning, as she was headed back to the hotel, Lori saw Devante on the other side of North Mount Shasta Boulevard, but he still looked mad, so she just decided to wait and give him room until he was ready to talk to her again.
That's healthy.
It is. I don't have a problem with that.
No.
But this is where I do have a problem, because she waited, and she waited, and she waited. She waited a full 48 hours before filing a missing persons report. Yeah.
Do you think wasn't there like a misconception about filing missing persons report before a certain time frame, or like you couldn't do it before a certain time frame?
It definitely could have been led by that. And some police departments will still say, like, we're not accepting official missing persons reports until this person has been missing for such and such period of time, especially if they're an adult. But she didn't even try. Because Mount Shasta is so rural, I imagine that they actually get missing persons reports, at least in the greater area, with not that irregularly, because people might get lost while they're hiking, or they just might not return on time and stuff like that. So if anything, I would expect them to take it seriously, maybe a little bit quicker than a city police department would. Mm-hmm. So that's just my thought. At first, the Mount Shasta Police Department weren't concerned. Lori didn't seem sad, upset, or scared. She just seemed a little crazy. And those are their words, not mine. Actually, I think their words were loony. So that's fine. Yeah. If I lived in Mount Shasta and someone went missing, I would probably, as I mentioned, be pretty concerned early on. But I think that Lori was so scattered and weird that they weren't sure if she was even fully aware of what was going on, which is fair. They also thought that there was a possibility that this was a simple lover's quarrel and that Devante had just checked into another hotel in town, which, again, doesn't seem crazy. However,
seems expensive, though.
It does seem expensive. Yeah, I don't know who fit the bill for the original hotel room, but either way, it is spendy. Then again, this was during the pandemic. Maybe rooms were really cheap during that time. Who knows? However, when Devante's family arrived in town later that day, the police realized that Devante's disappearance was uncharacteristic for someone like Devante, who was so devoted to his family. By May 11th, Devante's family decided that they needed to take the case into their own hands. They posted missing persons flyers all over Mount Shasta, and they organized search parties to cover the town and the surrounding woodlands, but unfortunately, they found no sign of him. Day after stressful day, Lori would say completely unhelpful and unhinged things like, "Today is going to be the day that he reappears," and "He's going to manifest himself today," which I don't even know what that means. I would slap her. She continued to talk about herself and how hard this all was for her, blah, 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 blah. And eventually, Devante's family just told her to go home, and I don't blame them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stop making this about you.
Mm-hmm. They have barely heard from her since she left Mount Shasta in May of 2020. After days of persistent effort on the part of the family, police received a tip from a resident who lived just north of Cold Creek Inn. This resident told police that she had overheard a couple arguing just outside her house on the morning of May 5th. She identified the couple as Lori and Devante, but there was only one problem. She said that this argument had happened at 9:30 a.m. that morning, which was hours after Lori said that she had last spoken to Devante.
Right, because wasn't she trying to watch the sunrise?
Yeah. Which, notably, in May, is long before 9:30 in the morning. Yeah. This tip, combined with Lori's odd comments and behavior and the concerns from Devante's family, were enough for the Mount Shasta Police Department to classify Devante's disappearance as a suspicious missing persons case. On May 14th, 7 days after Devante was reported missing, police followed up by requesting surveillance footage from May 5th from numerous shops in the heart of downtown Mount Shasta. I'm not sure why it took them 7 days.
Yeah.
That feels like too long, but
considering it's only 2 miles worth of shops.
Yeah. Yeah. They do have a small apartment. So I guess, sure. I don't know. That's going to come up a lot. They were able to get 10 different camera angles of Devante walking through town that morning. And we're going to talk about that now. So it's going to be a lot of directions. Just hold on to your butt. So Devante was first spotted on camera at 9:14 a.m. as he was walking south past the Mount Shasta Police Department on North Mount Shasta Boulevard, which was just under half a mile away from the hotel. Devante crossed the boulevard and turned west along Lake Street. He then crossed Lake Street, heading directly toward the Valero gas station. Security footage from the gas station shows Devante making a purchase, though I wasn't able to determine what was purchased. Devante then retraced his steps, walking north past the police station and heading in the direction he had come from. Devante was spotted again at 9:40 a.m. as he passed by Jefferson High on Rockefeller Road, although it looks like, based off of some major Google Maps sleuthing that I was doing, that Jefferson High is now closed. So if you look for it, I don't know where it was, honestly. 2 minutes later, he was spotted on the same camera, but this time he was heading south. Devante was then seen passing Crystal Matrix Gallery on Chestnut Street at 9:48 a.m. At 10 a.m., he was seen on a camera outside Sisson School on Alma Street. Another camera outside the school picked him up just a minute or so later, and this time he seemed to be heading back toward Rockefeller. Throughout the footage, Devante looks very normal on camera. He's not stumbling or making odd body or hand movements like we saw in the case of Elisa Lamb. Devante doesn't appear to be drunk, high, or in the midst of a mental health crisis. All of these roads are in or near downtown Mount Shasta. Although he doesn't seem to have a specific goal in mind, there certainly seems to have been intention and logic behind his movements, though the circling may indicate that he was a bit lost. And I'm going to show you what I mean because I have taken a few screenshots of Mount Shasta so you can kind of see what we're dealing with here. All right. So the theory that Devante may have been a little bit lost was seemingly confirmed when a mailman came forward saying that he had spotted Devante three different times between 9:30 and 10 a.m. that morning as he traveled through the area. Devante was walking along Rockefeller Drive when the mailman first spotted him. He looked a little disoriented and he asked the mailman for directions to the hotel on Alma Street. The mailman told him that there wasn't a hotel on Alma Street, but there was an apartment complex. So he gave Devante directions to that instead. No, I wasn't there. So I don't know how this conversation went down exactly. And I'm also not a postal worker, so I don't know what kind of time crunch they're operating under. But I don't think that I would ever assume that somebody was talking about an apartment complex if they were asking about a hotel. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, okay. I was just like, I don't understand. I also, just as like a side note, I did a little sleuthing, as I mentioned, and I actually couldn't find any apartment complex on Alma Street. It's possible that there was a building there, but it's been torn down, and it's possible that this was a mistake in the reporting somehow, but I don't think so because it came up a few times, so I'm not entirely sure what the hell is happening here.
Well, I would definitely trust a postal worker to know, like, streets, names of streets. And maybe it was the way Devante had the confidence of, like, I'm looking for a hotel on Alma.
Yeah.
Like, maybe that's where the misdirection was. But if they were looking for a hotel, I'd be like, are you looking for a hotel or are you looking for Alma? Like, there's some follow-up questions you got to ask.
That's kind of where I'm at, too, because especially since, like, Alma Street, like the entrance to Alma Street along North Mount Shasta Boulevard and Cold Creek Inn are very close to each other. I mean, they've got to be really close to a quarter mile, if not within a quarter mile of each other. So I might be able to put that together if I was that familiar with the area. But then again, I wasn't there. So I don't know really what was said. So I don't want to judge too harshly. I'm just a little confused. A few minutes later, The mailman saw Devante heading in the wrong direction on Alma Street, so he stopped to give him directions again. And then the mailman saw him again for the third time on Ski Bowl Drive, which is just off Rockfellow Road. But this time he didn't stop. So Ski Bowl Drive, I didn't actually, oh yeah, it's right here. On the, and he was like only a couple of feet into it. So he was on Rockfellow House. So again, all of this is within like a half, like a quarter to a half a mile radius of one another. And it's all very close to the hotel while still not being the hotel. So it's interesting.
It just seems like someone who's like severely directionally challenged.
It does. It does. I am going to go into that a little bit in more detail later on because I can sympathize with that to a certain extent. And I will explain later. So Ski Bowl Drive is only about half a mile from Cold Creek Inn, like I said, but the inn wouldn't have been visible from the road. Since Devante's cell phone was broken, there is no cell data to track, which means that the surveillance video and this report from the mailman were the last known sightings of Devante Morgan. Which, again, both of them happened at around 10 a.m. Throughout the episode, Sergeant Devin Pretty of the Mount Shasta, this is Pretty with two D's, not pretty. Anyway, that's not important. Throughout the episode, Sergeant Devin Pretty of the Mount Shasta Police Department reminds viewers time and time again that this is a small town with small town resources. They usually have one officer on duty and they don't have high-tech equipment or gear. But just to play devil's advocate, I have to imagine that search and rescue operations happen semi-regularly in a rural area like Mount Shasta. And yet, Siskiyou County Search and Rescue wasn't mobilized until May 20th, 13 Ooh. Days yeah, after Devante was reported missing and 15 days after he was last seen.
That is a lot of time.
It's a lot. It's too long.
Your body could be eaten by bears by then.
That's the thing. Well, here's the thing. If you want to do a search and rescue operation where you actually get to perform a rescue,
mm-hmm.
you got to do that pretty early on, my dudes.
Yeah.
This is not a young man who had the skills to forage his food. I don't have the skills to forage my food, and I'm more comfortable in the woods than Devante was. So I don't. Anyway. They conducted a thorough search of all of the areas within a half mile of where Devante was last seen. They went door to door to question people and they handed out missing persons flyers, but they found no sign of Devante. So the search expanded and Southern Oregon Search and Rescue and tracking dogs were brought in to assist, but Devante was still missing. Well, I do commend the search efforts once they started. I do not commend the timing, as we were saying earlier.
Yeah.
Devante's family thinks that this was all too little too late, and I have to agree.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if this is a fault on the part of the police or on the part of search and rescue teams or both or neither or whatever, but Devante had already been missing for 2 days by the time an official report was even filed. 15 days was far too late, especially when we consider that Devante was not an experienced outdoorsman and he wasn't even really familiar with small mountain towns in general. And this is where we come back to the directionally challenged thing. I usually have a decent enough time navigating my way through small to mid-sized towns or open country. But when I'm in the heart of a big city, all of the tall buildings make me completely disoriented because I'm simply mm-hmm. not used to them, especially if I'm walking around. And I think that the same thing could have happened to Devante in a small town because, again, he's just not used to it.
Mm-hmm.
On June 8th, Devante's family returned to Mount Shasta to continue their search. They posted more flyers in stores all over town and even expanded their search to some of the outlying campgrounds and other areas. Stick a pin in this for a minute because we are going to come back to it in more detail as we discuss theories in this case, which we are going to jump into right now.
What was the timeline for when they got the video again?
Let me double check. I want to say May 11th.
Again, there's just a lot of a lot of delays, a lot of time lapses, I guess I should say. And like, yeah, you're not a big department with a lot of technology, but search and rescue, I think, is it search and rescue most of the time volunteers?
Yes.
And yeah. I would think that your basic technology of cell phones, telephones, telephone tree, your search and rescue volunteers could happen in like a few hours.
That's kind of what I was thinking too. I will say that like this was during the pandemic, so there may have been some additional approval process that needed to happen in order to mobilize a search and rescue team. But it was also pretty early on in the pandemic, so I don't know how strict things were still at that point. This would have been outside and not inside. Mm-hmm. So that's another factor. And it still took, I actually looked it up, it took 7 days because that surveillance footage wasn't requested from other businesses until May 14th. And he was reported missing on May 7th. So it's a long time.
Yeah.
To just, yeah, not be having any idea where he went.
And it just doesn't feel like it was a priority for them, honestly. And that's disheartening. And like, I always hate to, you know, be overly critical of law enforcement, but right. That just seems like bare minimum. Take it seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, like, if the thing is about having like a small police department, you know, sometimes you can be like really busy, but the idea of having a small police department is probably that you're not crazy busy with a million bazillion different catastrophes that are all happening at the same time because your town is so small. So it's just a little bit. And I wonder if this just could have been an opportunity to like invite the Siskiyou County Sheriff's Office to participate, you know, something like that, you know, just adding more people to the search. It does feel all a bit delayed. All right. With that in mind, we are going to get into the theories, just like I promised. So theory number one, the girlfriend. The family and the police have both stated that they think that Devante's girlfriend, who we've named Lori, knows more than she has said. She's very interested in letting everyone know about her narrative and doesn't seem particularly upset or concerned about Devante the way that you would expect from a devoted, loving girlfriend. On one hand, I do see this, and I certainly wouldn't rule out the possibility that she knows more than she has let on, but I don't think she's ultimately responsible for Devante's disappearance. She looks, based off of the, her face is always blurred out, but you can see her body, and she looks very petite, and Devante wasn't a huge guy, but he wasn't a small guy either. If she killed him or harmed him in any way, I don't think that she could have moved the body on her own, and I don't think that there was an obvious strong motive for her to harm Devante. Arguments weren't uncommon in their relationship, and they both seemed to walk away rather than stick around and let things escalate, which is actually really healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there any suspicion or evidence, or maybe this is a theory later on, of relapsing on drugs?
No, it is not a theory that's presented later on. That might be a thing that she knew. I would guess Devante really only used weed as like a drug and then alcohol. And he didn't look drunk. He didn't smell drunk. He didn't or anything like that when the mailman saw him. He may have been high because I know a lot of people who can function pretty typically when they're high. And that could have like played a role in it. Cause I think that getting weed would be really easy in Mount Shasta. There's no, cause it's obviously legal. And there's no evidence, I think, that he purchased weed or that Lori purchased weed, at least that's been, you know, shared with the public, but they could have brought it from San Francisco. You know, they didn't have to get it while they were there.
Right.
So I'm not entirely sure. All in all, I might be wrong, but I'm more inclined to believe that Lori is a self-centered and self-serving individual whose elevator doesn't go all the way to the top. But I'm not sure that she's like a cold-blooded killer.
No.
Yeah.
And I don't know. She just, her story just seems like one more of like not caring versus like malicious.
Yes.
Her accounts are just like, eh.
Yeah. Yeah, and she just seems scattered and, like I said, like self-serving, self-absorbed. She's a couple sandwiches short of a picnic, I'm pretty sure. And yeah, so I just think that's more of what's going on there. They might have had drugs, and we could even talk about that in more depth later on. It's not a theory that's been pushed super hard, but it may come up in one of the other theories, like as a factor. Okay, so theory number two is stranger danger. This theory has a couple different elements, one that came from a tip received by the family and another that's just been generally theorized about. So we're going to start with the tip. On July 24th, 2020, on one of the family's frequent trips to Mount Shasta, someone from the town told Anthony that he had heard a rumor about Devante. Rumor had it that Devante was picked up in town by some local guys who tried to rob him.
Oh.
They took him out to Twin Arrows campground, and when they told him to hand over his money, Devante fought back, so they stabbed him and pushed him into the river.
Oh my gosh, that escalated so quickly.
It sure did. The police searched the Twin Arrows area, and they asked people from the community and the campground if they had seen Devante or anyone or anything suspicious, but no one reported anything, so they ultimately decided not to search the river.
I couldn't see that.
That this happened, that this theory holds merit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't rule it out at all.
No. I mean, I feel like the likelihood of something like that, I wouldn't describe it as rare, but like less often than maybe you think.
Yeah.
But also often enough that it's still a very real possibility.
Right. That it's not outlandish. It's not like, yeah, 100%. And so I think that actually kind of brings us pretty nicely into the second part of this theory. Devante's family has said that no one in the city of Mount Shasta was outright rude to them, but many of them were clearly uncomfortable with the family, and they couldn't help but wonder if there was some racism happening in this case. So let's address that to the best of my unprofessional abilities. Because I haven't mentioned this before, Devante and his family are Black. So I do think that the lack of early action on the part of the Mount Shasta Police Department was based, at least in part, on maybe a little bit of racism. I cannot prove that. I'm not saying that for sure, but given the information that we have, I just feel like, early on, I could chalk it up to just the crazy girlfriend being like a bad reporter of information because she just seemed nuts. But once Devante's family arrived, I think that finding Devante should have been a top priority for this police department.
Yes. I definitely didn't want to immediately jump to that, but it was for sure in my mind. And like very recently took a trip to Tahoe, came back. We did stop at Mount Shasta for a super quick, like I think bathroom break. And driving through that town gave me like uneasy feelings. Like it just, you know that you're different, you know, like those type of feelings.
Mm.
So while no one was like rude or anything like that, I just felt out of place.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine that it may have been more obvious with Devante and his family.
100%. Yes. Especially because so many of them were there to try to assist in the effort to find him.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, like, I mean, I haven't had that experience in Mount Shasta, but I am white, so I wouldn't have that experience in Mount Shasta. And I think that if I went missing in Mount Shasta, that, and I could be wrong about this again, but I don't think that it would take 15 days to mobilize the search and rescue team.
Right.
Yeah. I just really don't think that that would be the case. Again, I might be wrong, but I really don't think I am.
Right. I would lean more towards agreeing with that assessment.
Yeah. The family also noted a truck rolling through town with a Confederate flag plastered on at least one side of the vehicle. And one time, as they were making the rounds through one of the local campgrounds, They came across a group of campers who said that they hadn't seen Devontae, but, quote, if we do, we'll tie him to a tree in the back and give you a call. Don't do that.
Why would you think that's an okay statement? Like, is that supposed to make me feel better?
No. No, I think it was supposed to make them feel uncomfortable, and it did. So, I mean, mission accomplished. They did it. The family has also stated that they had guns pulled on them when they approached certain properties and certain individuals in the woods. That reaction on the part of those individuals very well could have been escalated due to racism, and I think it probably honestly was, but this could happen to anyone because a lot of people who live in the country and off-grid value their privacy and isolation above almost anything else. You weren't there for this episode, but I recorded one of the ones when you were sick, and in that episode I mentioned there are certain back roads that I don't drive on because I don't want to die.
Yeah, there's definitely some areas of the county that I work in where they just don't like people, law enforcement, like male people. Like, I don't know how these people get their packages, but the signs say no trespassing and all the things. Like, they genuinely hate presence on their property. So I don't think it's unusual for me to believe that, or it's not an unusual thing for me to believe that happened to his family.
No,
but like you said, like, it could have been exacerbated with a little bit of racial tension, but
yeah,
I don't think it's uncommon.
No, like, that could happen. That could honestly happen to me. I'm just not sure that it would happen as quickly to me. That's kind of more what I mean. But, like, even that, you know, like I said, and actually the case that I was referring to originally when I first said that I didn't go down certain back roads did happen, in fact, in the county in which you work. So, yeah, I had that in mind when I said that. Anyway, yeah. And Siskiyou County is another one of those ones where I just wouldn't push my luck. But how would you know that? Like, I grew up in a culture where my dad was like, nope, nah, we're not going down that road. So I'm a little bit more attuned to it versus, like, if I was in the city, I don't necessarily have, like, a ton of street smarts, you know, and it would be the same thing. So, all right.
Like, I guess you would have the street smarts in the sense that, like, certain areas of the city are places that you go, but you would think people in rural areas are just so peaceful and homey because they're out in the woods chopping their firewood.
Like Klaus from Klaus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Although he did not like
He wasn't a big fan. He did carry an axe. I'll note that. Yes. Yeah. Devontae's family also noticed that his missing persons flyers are sometimes removed from poles or stores across town, which does indicate some level of hostility to me, since Devontae is still a missing person, and he's currently the only missing person listed on the Mount Shasta Police Department's website. So,
wow.
Yeah.
I just feel discouraged and disappointed because the more anecdotal stories that come about related to, like, possible racial undertones, racist undertones, just makes me feel like he could have been found had people cared enough about him in that town.
Yeah. And I don't want to give, like, everybody a bad name because, you know, there were quite a few people who did help the family in their search early on before search and rescue was mobilized and stuff like that. And a lot of people were really happy to, like, open their doors and stuff like that and have a conversation. But it doesn't mean that they knew anything. And it still doesn't mean that they found anything. And it was still too little too late as far as official action is concerned. So that's a little bit unfortunate. When I say a little bit, I mean a lot. Yeah. Tessa McClure was serving as the mayor of Mount Shasta when Devontae disappeared. She has stated that Mount Shasta is not a racist community and they do not have a history of racism. Personally, I think that's kind of a bold statement. And although I think that there are probably many people living in Mount Shasta who would welcome diversity and would have been perfectly pleasant to DeMonte and the family, I don't think that we can definitively state that any place isn't racist, especially given this family's experiences.
That just seems like a bold statement to make anywhere in the United States.
100%. Well, anywhere. Full stop.
Ever. Just, yeah.
Period. Yeah. Yeah. I just don't. I understand. Maybe she was running for re-election. It would be really hard. I think it's really hard to be evaluative in that way, especially if you're like, well, I'm not racist, you know, so you feel like nobody else is racist too. I think that there could very much be that attitude because obviously like me, I don't consider myself to be a particularly racist person and I don't hang out with a lot of racist people. So I can be led to believe that there isn't a lot of racism in the world. And yet I know that's not true. So, you know, I just wonder if that's what's happening there.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, like, you know, the racist history and all that kind of thing is concerned, I couldn't find anything about, like, you just can't find a place that doesn't have a racist history, truth is be told. But also, you know, it wasn't one of those things, like, if you Google the history of Jackson County and the KKK, you're going to find some Google results. And we're pretty open about that, you know? Like, it's a known fact. I've known it since high school when I was, like, old enough to really understand what that meant. Couldn't find anything like that, so they maybe didn't have a clan, you know, faction in that area. But, but it's still a bold statement to make. And I will also note that there was some KKK activity in nearby Klamath County in December of 2020, though most of that seems to trace back to the 2020 presidential elections, it does indicate that there are white supremacists nearby.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. In an interesting twist, I did find a source that says that forensic experts have discovered that DeMonte's cell phone data was intentionally deleted after he went missing. Though I only found that reported in one place, so it may not be accurate. So take it with just a fistful of salt. All right. And that brings us to theory number three. DeMonte got lost. This theory doesn't require much explanation, but it does require some examination. DeMonte was from San Francisco. He lived his entire life in a big city and rarely ventured outside of his comfort zone. While I may be inclined to take a walk in the woods when I'm upset, I don't think that this would have particularly appealed to DeMonte in the same way. On the other hand, the Cold Creek Inn was toward the edge of town, and it wouldn't take too long to end up outside of city limits. But then again, I think that DeMonte probably would have stuck to roads rather than venturing into the woods at all. So why, even if he did get lost, why hasn't he been found? Even if he got really lost, if he stuck along the roads, you would expect somebody to have, like, unless there could have been scavenger activity, but you still would expect, they haven't even found one of his flip-flops. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's just nothing there. So, so it's just really interesting. I honestly don't know what I think, but we'll talk about it in more depth at the very end, which we're almost there. DeMonte's mother, Terry, still believes he is alive today, though she did agree to give a DNA sample in case any bodies are discovered that seem to match DeMonte's description. There was a body found after some of the fires in Jackson County in 2020 that seemed to match his description. And there was a DNA test performed and it was not a match to DeMonte Morgan. At the time of his disappearance, DeMonte was 28 years old. He is 5'11" tall and weighed about 165 pounds. He has black hair, brown eyes, and several tattoos, including a tattoo with either an image or the word money bag on his left hand and the words motivation and dedication on his right arm. He was last seen wearing a black turtleneck knit sweater, black sweatpants with a white line, and 49ers flip-flops. DeMonte walks with a limp after his injury from the drive-by shooting in 2017. There is currently a $25,000 reward for information leading to his return. If you have any information about the disappearance of Devontae Morgan, please contact the Mount Shasta Police Department at 530-926-7540, which will be, as always, linked in the show notes. So yeah, as I mentioned earlier, I don't know what I think in this case. I really don't think it was the girlfriend. I think that maybe she had some drugs, maybe some Quaaludes or some weird shit. But I think she's just cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, to be honest. Again, maybe she knew more, but I don't know. I just don't see the correlation, I guess.
The only reason I can imagine Devontae going out into the woods of his own volition is if he was high, because a sober person who does not have experience with the woods, I don't think would go out there on their own, especially when already lost.
Yeah.
I think at that point, if he's heading out into the woodsy area, he already knew he was a little bit lost. So why venture further into woods?
Yeah. I have to say that, like, in my experience, not that I've ever had any experiences like this, but if I had, I wasn't disoriented under the effects of marijuana. Yeah, I didn't find myself very disoriented when I was high. So, like, I wouldn't be inclined to do anything that would, like, take me off of my regular routine or anything like that. If anything, I just would have been like, I just want to sit down and eat some food. So I don't know. You know what I did think about, though? If he was walking around for a while, you know why he might have gone off into the woods? To go pee.
No, yeah.
Yeah. I just thought about that. Like, if he wasn't, you know, by the hotel, if he walked further out of town than he expected to or something like that, and he, like, stopped to just go pee someplace and he just didn't want to do that right off the side of the road, that would be really the only reason I can think of for him ending up, like, leaving the roadside. At the end of the day, I don't really know what I think. There isn't any information or evidence that seems to suggest that Devontae was kidnapped, murdered, taken out, or anything like that. There haven't been any bodies discovered. That being said, Siskiyou County is 4 million acres, and most of those are heavily wooded acres. So that doesn't necessarily mean that there isn't something out there to find. And that is a huge part of the reason why I wanted to cover this case, especially since we are local and we do know people who, like, have been to Mount Shasta and go to Mount Shasta and stuff like that. It's just a good thing to keep eyes open, ears open, you know, to see if anything can be learned so that Devontae can be found and so that his family can have answers. Because there just really isn't any evidence pointing to anything in that case. And I think a huge part of that is because the investigation started so late. If it had started earlier, we might know more. We might not. But now we'll never know because it didn't start in a timely manner, which is too bad. Well, that is this week's case. And next week, we will be back with another true crime case. Until next time, bye.
Goodbye.
If you liked the show, please leave us a great review and don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Wicked Within Podcast.